Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Tom Block, Keith Jones, a jam-packed show coming up. KJ, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Obviously, some disappointment on the baseball diamond. Some good news on the softball pitch, and a first padded practice. We got a lot going on.
Kurt Weiler from the Osceola will join us to break down what's going on the field. Stephen Ponder, the president and CEO of Seminole Boosters, will join us to talk about what's going on off the field. I just want to know, have you and Kathy booked your trip to Dublin yet, or are you going to book that trip to the couch to watch that?
We're booking the trip to the couch, Tommy, because I got my passport about 13 or 14 years ago on one of those basketball trips when Florida State was going to Puerto Rico. Because in Wildwood, I thought going to Puerto Rico required a passport. It did not. Since then, my passport has expired with it never being used, so I don't even have one. So we'll be on the couch for that one.
You answered everything before I could jump in and ask a question there, Keith, on that one.
I'm just saying.
You know that you can renew a passport, just so you're aware.
I'm aware.
However, you probably can't get there on a direct flight from Wildwood. I don't think that's true. Wherever there is.
Right.
All right, Stephen Ponder from Seminole Boosters joins us right after this on Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Welcome back to Front Row Knowles. Tom Block, Keith Jones with you as we open up the Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. And we say hello to a guy who's been on the show a couple of times before. He is the president and CEO of Seminole Boosters. Stephen Ponder is with us. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Tom. I appreciate it. Thanks to you and Keith for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. I don't get past the stadium that frequently. And so probably like many people you talk to, every time I drive past it, I mean, right now it's like an open-air stadium. I mean, you don't even need a ticket. You can see in from the west side, right? But why don't you update us on how the construction is going right now?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you're walking by it, you can see through to the other side, to the east side of the stadium, and it is an amazing sight. And then, you know, as I talk to, you know, boosters everywhere, we sent a link out to Seminole Booster members, and they can go online from their desk and look at it. And so many people tell me that, yep, first thing I click on in the morning, see what's going on. So it is a massive construction site and a massive project. But we have finished the demolition work, and they're starting now with rebuilding that west side. And as you know, for 2024, we'll be putting in roughly 7,000 temporary seats. They're actually going to start construction for the permanent stands from the, you know, the back of that west side, which would be closer to the, you know, the current suites that are still remaining in our offices, and they'll build down toward the stadium. So when people get to the 2024 season, you're going to see construction at the top, and we'll have seats along the field, and then we'll take those out after the 2024 season and finish the construction, and should be, you know, be ready to go for the 2025 season.
Stephen, I guess that's the question everybody wants to ask, and you're projecting August of 25, so that's quite a ways away, but are we on schedule? How are things going? Have there been any hiccups?
We are on schedule right now, and our construction team that we have has done a great job. Manhattan and Culpepper are our contractors, and the Nations Group is our owner's rep, and they've done a great job working with, you know, athletics and the university and the group that we've got together to get this thing built. So, we are on time right now and ahead of schedule a little bit. So it's always a good thing. But, you know, obviously we've got a game to play in 2025 in September with Alabama scheduled to be here. And so we're ready to welcome them to a refurbished Doak Campbell Stadium in September of 2025 and kick it off.
We're talking with Stephen Ponder from Seminole Boosters. Stephen, I'm going to ask a long-winded question because I'm good at that. One of my specialties here, but the broad premise is how are sales going And then the caveat is, and I know you've been in these conversations because I get into them, Keith gets into them. You know, some people I talk to understand that progress and revenue, that's the way we got to go. And then there's others who are disappointed that they've been displaced from tickets that they've had in the family for a long time. You know, kind of update us on how those conversations are going and where we are from a sales standpoint.
Yeah, I'd say I'll address the second part of that first. I understand this is a very personal project. The way we're selling it is personal because we're going person by person. But more than that, it's a personal project because, as you mentioned, there's been, you know, people who've been season ticket holders for a long time, and whether they're family by blood that they're sitting with or they became family because they've sat together for so long, it makes it very personal. And I do understand, you know, people feeling like, man, I don't like this project because you've you know, changed the way I consumed game day. And I get that. But at the same time, you know, we have to move forward. And, you know, as I tell people all the time, like, you know, as we talk about this project, people may not agree with it. I'm not going to shade from the facts of where we are. I get that people may be upset. They may love it. They may hate it. But we're moving forward on, you know, trying to create the best game day atmosphere for Florida State, because we know, and I had this conversation today with a gentleman. You know, he's like, look, I could sit at home on my couch and watch games. And we know that is out there. And so for us, we restrooms, concessions, all of that impacting everybody along that west sideline. And we're trying to do the same thing around the entire stadium in terms of improving the game day experience. So to answer your question on that, Tom, it is a personal thing. I do think that the farther that we've gotten along in the sales process, and again, we haven't talked to everyone that's a Seminole Booster member or even all season ticket holders yet. But the further we've got along, at least as we have those individual meetings, people may say, look, I don't necessarily like it, but I at least understand what you're doing. And that's what we've been, you know, as I mentioned about a personal sales process, it has gone, if you will, slower because we are going with our staff meeting, you know, with a donor and their family together so that they understand the project. Where we are from a sales standpoint is we are in the current club that is closest to the field on that west sideline. There's roughly 2,300 seats in there. And on that entire west sideline club, we're 88% sold. And so we're getting, you know, closer to being complete in that phase. We've already started working on the Champions Club with some people who have some seats in there. And that'll be the next place we go from a sales perspective is in that Champions Club. And then we'll come back to that west sideline with another product. So it's going well, but we also are always looking at the calendar on the date of the day and know that in, you know, next September we kick off. So we have a sense of urgency to expedite the sales process, but not expedite the conversation when we meet with each individual booster.
Steve, I think folks need to also understand and be fair, even with the new CFP agreement that was just announced by ESPN, the disparity between the haves and the have-nots only gets wider. And
right.
So the ability to generate that non-media revenue, the pressure on you guys even increases.
Yeah, and you're right. And, you know, and I guess I heard somebody one time, they were talking to me about don't make my stress your stress. And I think I had that conversation today with someone that said, look, I know, understand the university and athletics, y'all need that, but don't make that my stress. And I think to your point, I think for all of us, you know, we're not entitled to anyone's support. We're not entitled to anyone having to do anything. But we do hope that people understand that for us to compete, and as you mentioned, there's a media number that's out there from a television and conference revenue. And then we generate, athletics generates revenue. And Seminole Boosters is a part of that. Season ticket sales are a part of that. Our multimedia partners are a part of that. And for sure, every ounce of revenue that we can produce out of Doak Campbell Stadium or the Tucker Center for Men's and Women's Basketball, or, you know, at Dick Houser or at Joanne Graf softball stadium, any of those, all of it adds in to the total. You know, our national championship soccer program, the more people we can get to come to that, all of it helps the bottom line for all of athletics. But for sure, the driver in that for us is our football program. And we've got to generate as much money as we can on a game day to help not only our football program, but all of our sports programs.
Give us an update on related to revenue, obviously, where we are in the annual fund and the process as you work to sign up new members.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, right now we're ahead of where we were last year in total number of members year to date, and also total dollars committed. And, you know, we're about $1 million ahead of where we were last year at this time. You know, we finished last year with 14,000 and roughly 500 donors. We're right at 11,500 right now. And so we've got a ways to go to get to the, you know, the volume. And we've mentioned that we want to try to get to 20,000 boosters by the year 2025. And that goes back to Keith's question. You know, one of the reasons why we want to get wider in terms of number of donors is just from an overall support standpoint, whether people attend a football game or a basketball game or not, they can still support Seminole Boosters from wherever they are. And so our annual fund is vital. We're ahead. We've had over $1 million in increases from roughly 1,100 donors. And so, you know, it's going well. But as I told our staff today, no matter what our goal is, we got to keep pushing, because every dollar we raise that we can push back into our athletics program helps us tremendously.
Stephen, short term, the spring showcase, we're all going to be over on the opposite side and looking at that bare space. But what the football team has put together, the season they had last year, the opportunity to open in the quote-unquote new season against Alabama, it is a pretty special time in FSU athletics, particularly in football.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'm excited about the spring showcase being, you know, in Doak Campbell, April 20th, because while, yes, there's going to be obviously interruptions, because we've got work going on the east side as well. You know, with a lot of ADA enhancements, we're putting in chair rails, widening seats, doing some other things on the east side. So seating is going to be limited, but I'm excited for people to see progress in all directions. And I think it's helpful to for people, you know, you may see something, a picture online, but when you see it in person, you're like, wow, that is it's massive, the site that's on that west sideline. So we will use the north stands, the south stands. We're going to use the Champions Club, the suites, and some seats in the east side. And I think we'll have a great, a great spring showcase getting ready for, like you said, you know, we came off a great 23 season and looking forward to 2024. And by all accounts, you know, everything you hear and see, our football program, and Coach Norvell even talked about it the other day, that, you know, we're just from a speed standpoint, a really fast team, and I can't wait to see them April the 20th.
I think it's no secret to our audience, Stephen, that the season opener this year will move outside of Doak Campbell Stadium. Is a pretty attractive trip for a lot of FSU fans to go to Dublin, really a once in a history of the program type event right now. What can you tell us about what's in store for Dublin and how tickets are moving for that matchup with Georgia Tech?
Yeah, no, I think everybody's really excited about that game. And, you know, the sponsors of the game, Aer Lingus and On Location, really are, when they put together all the packages that we offered through our office to everyone to attend the game. One thing that people ask me is about us making money, Seminole Boosters making money on the game in Ireland or athletics, et cetera. But as Michael, you know, offered said, you know, it's an away game for us. So, Seminole Boosters isn't making money on this game. It is really an opportunity for our kids to be able to go to play in a unique environment. And I think it offers something special for our fans to be able to watch a game, you know, and again, it's a neutral site for us, even though it's an away game per se. But everybody I talked to that's going, so excited. They got their plans for, you know, golf dinner. I know that there's going to be a ton of activity around some pubs there in Ireland that I think will be marketed. So, you know, I think we'll have tailgates for about 3 days prior to the game and obviously one before the game. So it should be a lot of fun. And I know that others have said it, but I can't wait to hear the marching chiefs in the streets of Dublin before the game. So it should be awesome.
We've talked a lot about dope. We've talked a lot about football. I know comprehensive program excellence is a driving force. AD Alford talks about it all the time. We've got some other projects that you guys are working on that we need to just mention, most notably the operations center.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Dunlap Football Center, it has broken ground, and they have moved some of the facility there that was closest to Stadium Drive, moved it to the other end. So the new Dunlap Football Center can attach to the existing practice facility. And it's going to be it's 150,000 square feet, which is really hard to comprehend, but it's going to be a massive building. And while it definitely will help football, it's also going to help all of our sports, because there's space in the Moore Center that football is currently occupying, and all of our other sports will move into. We've already renovated the weight room in the Moore Center, and all of our teams that use that weight room get the benefit of a new weight room there. And there'll be other facilities that we're going to improve in the Moore Center as well. But all of it is an effort to help all of our 21, with women's lacrosse being added, sports programs to be able to compete at the highest levels. But I look forward also on, April the 20th for people to see the progress related to the Dunlap Football Center. We started with the seat assignments and parking assignments for next year. And, part of the excitement of seeing the Dunlap Football Center also means that we lost some parking for 24. And then we'll gain some of it back when we come back in 2025. But there is a lot going on, and it is impacting everyone on a daily basis, but also on a game day. But I appreciate everybody's patience as we continue to grow in the name of progress.
Steven, I feel like NIL was so prevalent in the conversation. It was leading the conversation for a while, and now we're either used to it or we've just found other ways to make headlines with lawsuits and all that other stuff. But where is NIL right now? Is it still at arm's length from the university and from Seminole Boosters? Are there two collectives? Is there one collective? I mean, what's the update there?
Yeah, so the legal answer, from an NCAA standpoint, is that Seminole Boosters can market collectives. We can talk about them. We can help boosters who say, hey, I want to support the NIL initiative, on where to give it. The only thing that we can't do is onboard money, and we can't negotiate with student athletes or their agents. And quite frankly, I don't know that we would ever want to be in that situation, because, eventually we want to be fundraising from all former student athletes and having a relationship outside of a negotiation on a so-called contract. So, that's the part where what we can't do. So we do have right now two collectives. We're working to combine those into one. But right now we have two. One, the Battle's End, does football and golf. We have another that is representing all other sports. And, they've been great for us to work with. But we are working towards having one collective that represents all sports. And I would just tell you from a priority standpoint, because I get this question a lot about, are we in competition with the collectives? And, when people ask me, hey, where do you want me to give? And I just tell you right now that our annual fund, and I mentioned it earlier, is our backbone, and it is vital for us to operate our sports programs. But equally now, the collective space, NIL space, is becoming right there with us. And so I tell people, we want people to join Seminole Boosters, but we also want them to join our collective. The Battle's End is the one right now that we have from joining, and you can go online and do it. And if you have a question about any sport, please, you can email me at steven.ponder@fsu.edu, and I'll be glad to answer any questions on any sports. But it is necessary and vital that we get as many people as possible to join Seminole Boosters, but also to join the Battle's End.
And given the landscape and what the Tennessee ruling in the last 2 weeks, we're still in the wild, wild west in terms of rules and things. So it's learn as you go, learn on the go.
There's no question. And, we watched that stuff. There was a ruling this past weekend in Oregon, and they've got a new state law that's different than what others are. And so I do think that, as Tom has mentioned, and Keith, you just said it, every day we're learning more. I think our ultimate goal is that we want to be as close to this as possible, because, look, the Seminole Boosters has a long history of support of Florida State Athletics, and our boosters have been so great. We don't want to have a separation from that conversation. We want to help in that. And that's why it's imperative that we stay up to date on everything that's going on from a rules standpoint. We follow the rules, but we also help facilitate when we can, having as many people as possible support the collective effort through the Battle's End. So I would just say stay tuned, continued as we keep moving forward. We'll communicate with everyone as much as we can, as quick as we can, on as those rules change.
Stephen Ponder from Seminole Boosters, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up again soon. We'll have more Front Row Noles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Noles, and we once again open up that Earl Bacon Agency hotline to say hello to our Osceola insider, Kurt Weiler, who is with us. Kurt, we just had Stephen Ponder on from Seminole Boosters, and that got us thinking about football and Dublin and stadium expansion and all that stuff off the field. So let's talk about on the field right now. It's been a week of practice. The pads have come on. What's the first thought, or who's the first player that comes to mind through a handful of practices for you?
I mean, I could go a few different ways. I mean, you could go the obvious. You could talk DJ Uiagalelei, who definitely looks the part physically and has, I think, one of the more impressive arms of anyone I've covered in my time. I miss Jameis, so I don't have that measuring point. But you see why he was a five-star recruit. I think a guy like Malik Benson's been really impressive, and a guy who has kind of looked like a guy who could step into that wide receiver one role. But I'll tell you who low-key I wasn't sure would be maybe the guy who's the biggest surprise, I'll say, through three practices, is Jalen Lucas. He is incredibly quick. I mean, the Ja'Kai Douglas lover that KJ is, I mean, they got another one, but he might even, like, his acceleration is pretty ridiculous. He gets the ball in space and does some pretty special things with it.
The ability to get out of cuts, to make cuts and get out of cuts, is what separates. That straight line speed is always, always important. But that stop and starting, What do you see over on the defensive side?
Yeah, on the defensive side, I mean, when you're looking at the line, I think really Saturday was the first day in pads. That was really the first day you're able to take too much away there. I mean, the new guys look the part physically. I think all of them are really impressive physically. Pat Payton, he's put on 15 pounds and looks the part. And he kind of, I thought, a really encouraging sign from him day one is that he kind of was like, I wanted to see with my added weight how it affected my speed. And he was like, oh, it didn't affect it at all. I'm just as impactful in that way, which I think is really encouraging. I've liked what I've seen from DJ Lundy. I think he has slimmed down a little, is trying to round out his game, become more all around like they need him to kind of be. And I've liked Sean Murphy too. And in the secondary, Azaria Thomas has been maybe the most impressive player through three practices. I mean, he just, you don't want to overreact too much, but he looks ready to, like, contend to maybe be an all ACC type DB. Just really, really impactful, consistently great in coverage. And another guy who's impressed me early is Earl Little. I mean, it's never been about ability for Earl Little. It's about staying healthy, and he is a talented recruit coming out of high school, and he's had a knack for being around the ball and making plays in the ball through his first couple practices here.
Is the speed that much – is it noticeable that they're that much faster?
Yeah, I think, I mean, especially with the wide receivers, when you bring in Malik Benson, who that's, I think, his major asset, when you bring in Jaylen Brown, I mean, that, I wonder if it's straight line versus, you know, how's the lateral movement more, but I mean, he can really move too. I mean, he had a couple reps where he blew by Azaria off the line, and that's not something a lot of people do. Azaria normally does a good job of staying with guys, but I think with a guy like Jalen Lucas, and a few other guys as well, I mean, I think, Roydell Williams and Cam Davis are probably even a little faster than I thought too. So yeah, it does feel like, especially I think the offensive skill position that is a bigger focus, like Mike DeBrell kind of said, coming into spring.
One of the things that always comes up in spring is folks that were injured during the season and maybe had procedures, or folks that waited to the end of the season to have procedures. And are there noticeable holdouts that Seminole fans would recognize?
JJ, you're trying to get me in trouble. I'm not really supposed to talk about that stuff until Mike Norvell does. I don't think I imagine here soon. He said give it a week or so, and he would kind of release the injury report. So I imagine we could ask soon, and he might be able to tell us. But he plays that stuff close to the chest, and I don't want to get my outlet in trouble.
Well, you didn't listen to my question. The question was yes or no. I didn't ask for names.
Oh, fair.
Because I can get pulled underneath that rug, too.
You're never going to have everybody. You're never going to have 100% participation. Sure, there are some, but I think the encouraging thing Mike said last week at his press conference is there's nothing right now that he expects to last into the summer. Like, there's nothing that he thinks is going to bump up against the season at this point.
My biggest fear always in spring, and this goes back 40 yep. years, is that you've got 47 people standing on the sidelines in green jerseys.
Yep. You know, ACL now, and your season's probably done. Like, you know, I mean, we're close to it.
Yeah. You know, what's the collective look like? Can we field three football teams with the folks that aren't practicing?
Keith, we'll know soon enough, bud. The game's coming up on April 20th. I mean, you can wait till then, can't you?
Well, if
I think
it were
you'll
a
get
game,
clarity before then.
If it were a game, I would definitely see it, but.
I hear you. Derek says you passed the test, by the way, Kurt, so you're safe. You're allowed back at practice this week. For our listeners' sake, we should point out that we're having this conversation before they practice on Tuesday, so this is really through three practices, I guess. DJU, his size and his arm, everybody comments on the arm strength. Are you able to discern, you know, how is it? Obviously, he throws 60 yards. It looks great. How is he at throwing 10 yards or some of, you know, what does it look like? I know there's only been one day in pads thus far.
Well, yeah, I've been pretty impressed for the most part with, I mean, I think the all-around passing game. And definitely, I think a bit of day one, the still trying to feel the teammates out. I mean, he's thrown to guys, but that was his first true practice with all these, I mean, brand new teammates, an entirely new team of guys to throw to. So I think there was a little bit of the kind of feeling each other out, and there still is a little bit, but his consistency is pretty good. I think you can – probably I would say he's been the most consistent quarterback on all routes, not just, I mean, the effortless deep ball he throws through three practices.
Anything else from the quarterbacks, the other quarterbacks that's jumping out?
Yeah, I think, I mean, physically, I think Luke looks the part. I think he moves well, too. I don't think I really, until he went to tour duty, I don't think I really knew that he's, I mean, it could be a dual threat guy. That's true of Brock, too. But I think Luke has had his freshman moments. I think it is definitely catching up to the speed of the game a little bit, but I think he has thrown some really nice balls and has had enough encouraging signs for sure. Brock's a guy. It's funny. It seems like sometimes he can be a bit of a gamer where he's at his best when, I mean, it's a 7-on or things like that. And kind of there's activity type things. I thought it was encouraging. I think one thing in particular talking to Brock is he talked pretty candidly last week. We talked to him about, you know, I thought the speed of practice would translate to game speed. And once I got in those games against Louisville and Georgia, I kind of learned like, oh no, like it is different. And now I need to bring that mentality from that and the understanding of what that's going to be like into practice. I think he's kind of bringing a different intensity to practice this year because of that.
Again, a short body of work, Kurt, but last year's team, I think a takeaway was that practices were always competitive. And obviously those of us that have been around for a while know that during the dynasty years, et cetera, very, very small sample size. But what's that competition amongst groups and folks within the group look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I think you would expect often the defense to be ahead early in camps. I think that's something you often hear, but I think the offense has its share of successes for sure. It's not one side. I think there are days where one side of the ball is better. I think there are periods where there's some really nice back and forth. A receiver makes a great catch. A DB makes a pick or breaks up a pass. I think you see that competitiveness. I mean, I think you look at really both the secondary and the wide receiver group and you see more guys who probably could play than there will be probably realistic spots in the rotation, which is encouraging.
Kurt, I haven't been out there yet, and I only know what I saw on the sideline. Might have been 2 years ago now, the first time I saw Cam Davis. But how does Cam Davis look, and how do the running backs look as a group?
Yeah, Cam is always faster than I think he is. I mean, you look at him, like, at first glance, he could pass for, like, body-wise, Trey Benson. Like, to be a freshman, I mean, I think Trey even tweeted something about that last week. Like, he don't look like a freshman And he has kind of, I think, hit the ground running. And I mean, he kind of talked, remember before he enrolled, he talked about, you know, like, I don't need to start right away, but I would like a role right away. And it's not like I feel entitled to, it's I want to go earn. And he has definitely, I think, brought that mentality. And I think the group, I mean, even in the post-Trey Benson world, I feel pretty good about the group. I like what I've seen from Moide Williams. LT's healthy again after he was out for the Orange Bowl and looks like himself. I mean, because I, as a guy who always has a couple days of practices, like a plays in each practice where he reminds you, you know, like, oh yeah, he is probably going to force his way in somewhere too. And I think even Sam Singleton's had some moments. I'm thinking I mentioned everyone. I thought it was noteworthy. I mean, really still trying to figure out the rotation, trying to figure out who can make the most of their opportunities, but their first team period Saturday, the first padded practice, the first like 11 on, the first five reps, were five different running backs. They gave everybody a chance to kind of see what they could do, you know?
I think a key to that too, and this is a mix of on the field and off the field, is Toa Fili's leadership. I mean, if he can set the bar and you know, encourage, pull, push, whatever the case may be, the younger guys, I think he has a vital role to play. And everything I've seen through tour duty and his first week interviews, I mean, he's speaking the part. I don't know if he's doing the part yet, but he's speaking the part.
Yeah, he is, for sure.
That with Kurt Weiler, our Osceola Insider. All right, plenty more time to talk football in coming weeks. We only left a little time to talk baseball here, Kurt. So there's really – everybody who listens to this show knows the way the weekend went. And, again, we're recording before the matchup with Florida. I told Keith before we started recording that I actually was pleased with the response from the team after getting clubbed in game one. They came out, had a big lead in game two. Then after blowing it, they came out again and did the same. Like, I think there's a lot of positive there. Now, you can go the other way. You got to find somebody who can throw strikes in the bullpen. I'm not saying I'm glad it happened, but at some point you needed to be challenged and figure out what you had. And unfortunately, you took it on the chin in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, I think none of the polls punished Florida State too bad. I think they kind of fell down five spots in each of the polls, which when you get swept, it feels not that severe. And I think it's because, I mean, they should have won that series. They were up by seven or more runs. They were up by four runs in all three games. They were up by seven or more runs in the last two. And the bullpen was what it was. And, I mean, the bullpen, I think, has obviously been better than that. I mean, it's hard to envision a much worse weekend for a bullpen than that. Cam Leiter, obviously, not great in his start in game one either. But, yeah, I think that's it's a come-to-Jesus moment of sorts, if you will. I mean, it's figuring out who you can rely on. To me, I mean, I have to imagine, no one's going to admit it, I have to imagine Sunday, especially once it started going south, almost just was like, there's the inevitable sense with those guys of here we go again. And once that ball started rolling, it was tough to stop. And just a day off, I mean, I think, and a reset will do wonders for them. I think the good news is I'm not sure you're going to play another lineup that good again this year. I think you got them at the perfectly wrong time. I mean, so many of those guys watching the broadcast, so many of those guys were like on crazy hot streaks and had like 10 homers in the last 11 games or something like that. That park is crazy. The wind was crazy. I mean, there were factors that went into it, but yeah, I mean, I think no doubt. I think that weekend brings up, I mean, I think you have a Omaha quality lineup. I think most weekends, I think you have a very good postseason starting rotation. And the bullpen showed itself to be I think the good news is, I mean, that's not what they're going to be every weekend. I feel pretty confident saying, I said on Twitter this morning, the worst weekend they'll have all year. They're not going to have another one like that. They've been better. They handled Florida pretty well. And that's a similarly talented team and hostile atmosphere. But yeah, I think we'll see how that goes. And then I think this weekend, home against Louisville feels important because I feel like, especially at home, that's a series you should win. And that's not a lineup that's been absolutely crushing people.
And I apologize, Kurt. That was going to be my question, though. Do you have the arms to have a bullpen that you can win in the postseason, or do they got to completely restructure?
Well, there's not really completely restructuring. I think they do. I think a lot of guys had bad weeks at the same time. And I think the truth of the matter is, I mean, that's college bullpens for you. They have bad weeks. They have bad games. Heck, some Major League Baseball teams can't field competent bullpens. So, like, have games like that. Have weeks like that. I mean, it's not what you want to see. It's definitely a splash of water in the face after your 19-0 start, and it shows where this team can still improve and has to figure some stuff out. But No, I mean, I think I'm not like worried that the season's about to go off a cliff by any means. I think it was a series you should have won, and because of the bullpen doing what it did, you got swept.
Kurt, I didn't mean to omit this when we were talking football, but it occurs to me that Pro Day happened last week. So just real quickly, I feel like I heard good things about Akeem Dent. Overall, could you get a sense from the scouts there, off the record stuff? I mean, do you have any feel for how this – I mean, I know there was a buzz coming out of the combine. I don't think last week diminished it at all, but what are your thoughts just based on the legwork you've done on this?
Well, I was home covering lawsuit stuff that day. I can speak to it. Bob was there representing us. That was the same day the lawsuit stuff was happening in North Carolina. So I was in the home office. But yeah, no, I think Akeem is a guy. I think he's a guy who you would have thought is the major, maybe could have been invited to the combine guy who wasn't, who had that opportunity at Pro Day. And it seems like made the most of it. I mean, it was Keon, I think I know. And I think Keon was back and I thought, performed well there. I think there was some buzz about him. I know, I mean, Antonio Pierce, I think the only head coach there was Antonio Pierce, and he was talking to Braden Fisk some. You wonder if the Raiders are eyeing him and when they're eyeing him, because he's a guy who's really boosted his stock. It wasn't maybe, I mean, the downside of so many guys getting the combine and doing so well at the combine is, like, I remember last year I thought this year's Pro Day was going to be, like, really cool seeing all those guys working out, and a bunch of them didn't do a ton of stuff because they had done what they needed to at the combine. But no, I think a lot of the guys who really could stand to have good days, I thought really did.
The pro day at the college campuses is always interesting. I remember Jameis's pro day when his personal coach was out there with the broom. Kurt, I don't know if you were on board then, but you just see some unusual things going on at the college pro days, the campus pro days, rather.
Well, and I will say, too, I think a really encouraging thing, Jordan was still not doing anything, but he's back, I think, throwing some now. And I think he sounds optimistic. He might be able to do a private workout before the draft, which I feels like if he's able to perform well there, could really boost his chances of getting drafted.
That's great to hear. Kurt, we will let you go, and we'll probably see you out at the park this weekend, unless you're on lawsuit duty. But Kurt Weiler from the Osceola, appreciate it, sir.
Appreciate it, guys.
More Front Row Noles coming up right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Noles, good conversation with Stephen Ponder, also with Kurt Weiler. Where would you like to start in terms of dissecting or reacting to any of those conversations?
Just apologize that I wasn't trying to get Kurt in trouble asking about injuries. You know, one of the things over all the years that I've been around Florida State Athletics in the spring is simply the number of bodies that are able to practice. So if it's a lesser number and they're doing well, that's also a very positive sign for this football program, because far too often you have a lot of people missing some very important time during the spring.
Keith, we all know that back in your day, they would just Ronnie Lott your finger and cut it right off, and you'd get back out there and you wouldn't even miss a period, right? I mean, we know how it was back when you played.
Well, it might not have been quite that bad, but it was a little different. Let's just put it that way.
I'm about to find out if my son has got some toughness to him, because over the weekend in soccer, he broke his wrist. And so I just got home today. He's got a cast on, freshly minted from TOC. But now we've got the bubble wrap so he can return to soccer practice and play. He's a goalie normally, but so he can get back out in the field and go after it.
Injuries are part of it. You know, the age-old thing. Coach Bowden taught me this early on. I didn't hear this in high school until I got to college. And many of our listeners have heard this. But you have got to learn to play hurt. You don't play injured. But as you get up there, and particularly you get to the NFL level, you're going to have to play hurt. You don't play injured, but you're going to have to play hurt. That's part of what you're called to do.
We're only 3 days into spring practice as you and I are talking, and I'm already excited about the season again, just from hearing the bits about the speed. I know it's spring, and everybody looks great in spring, and we always talk, if a D-tackle looks great, how good did the center and the guard really look on that play? I get all that, Keith. But I'm excited about these parts and pieces now that I'm starting to hear all these reports from Kurt and Bob and the Osceola crew.
Well, because last year this time, we knew we had some parts and pieces. We were concerned about some of those parts and pieces leaving early, and they decided to come back, which really, really helped the team. But the parts and pieces are better parts and pieces, and that's part of building your program, so that they can form and play and gel like a team, like last year's team did, with better parts and pieces, then yes, it's a very exciting time. Very exciting time.
P.S., I will be sure to drink a Guinness for you while you're on your couch and I'm across the pond.
Understood. And
that's the kind of friend I am, KJ.
I understand. I'll probably celebrate in the same way, sitting on my couch. And then I will text you to see where you are, what you're doing, and I expect you to respond.
Just to clarify, I won't be drinking the Guinness during the game or the broadcast.
Oh, so you're a lightweight.
Before or after, all bets are off. No, I'm a responsible sideline reporter, Keith.
What you're saying is you're a lightweight. I understand.
Anything else for the good of the order here, sir?
You know, we haven't even talked about the lawsuit, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And obviously, with Clemson joining the fray, there's just, you know, there's some monumental seismic type of things that are happening within the ACC, regardless of how this falls out.
Yeah, no question. As we're talking, the judge from North Carolina had not ruled yet on the proceedings from last week. And, of course, we're ticking closer to the proceedings in Florida, which I think are April 9th. So, anyway, we are, of course, it seems like every other day there's news on that front. So who knows? We won't take a break. We'll take a break. It's going to be a week-long break, and then we'll do this again next week. Until then, he's Keith. I'm Tom. Thanks for tuning in to Front Row Noles.